This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by TurbulenceTraining.com, BlackStarLabs.com, and by StrengthCoach.com. Well, welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 131. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and first we have Jonathan Fass of AcceleratedStrength.com and JonathanFass.blogspot.com.
Mm-hmm.
John.
What up?
How's it going?
It's going good.
Good. And we got Lee Peel of AvidityFitness.net and FLZine.com. And for people in the comments that didn't know how to spell it, it's just FLZINE.com. What's up, Lee?
What's up? I felt the need to come in with like a wicka wicka for some reason. I don't know.
You going to raise the roof too?
I think so.
Maybe just kick it up a notch. Bam.
Yeah.
Damn.
Word.
Speaking of kicking it up a notch, we didn't have a show last week due to the holiday.
Yep.
Mom.
Yeah.
Family. Bunny.
Fams.
Jesus.
Any, yeah. We celebrated the Big E last week. You know, what did you guys do did you do anything special for the last weekend, John?
No, it was Passover.
Lee, how about you? Anything special? Did you do an Easter egg hunt?
I ate dyed eggs, you know. It's good times. That's about it.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we're back. We have a huge show. Huge show for this week. Huge. And the topics of this week's show, they're surely going to be based on the mailbag, because I know you listeners probably know that you have been sending in a crap load of questions, and we have about 50 questions on the queue, and we're going to answer as many as we can. And for the future, this is a rule that I'm going to state. I'm going to put this up on the website, but we'd like to have as detailed a background about you as possible, but please keep the questions as short as you can so we can get through as many as we can. Because just if we have to waste a lot of time reading questions, and you know I can't read them without messing up at least once, so we have to just keep them short. I did take speech class in college, or public speaking, so I should be a little bit better at this, but since I'm not talking to anyone, I'm just looking at an LCD screen, it doesn't really help too much, but...
I assume that was a pass-fail?
No, I think I got a B in it, AB. I did pretty good. I'm pretty comfortable talking in crowds and such like that, but I'm not talking to a crowd. Like I said, I'm at my desk staring at a white wall and
maybe you could set up some of your stuffed animals.
Maybe I could, like the Beanie Babies. I could break those out.
Oh my god, that was
great. You know? You can give them little barbells.
In word bubbles? Can I do word bubbles? Hooray for Kevin. John, you're
that was hysterical. I just had this picture of you sitting there in front of your computer,
right?
And all your stuffed animals are lined up on your bed, and you just keep looking over at them and smiling, and they're just looking at you.
Dude, I am no Stephanie Tanner. I am no Stephanie Tanner.
Oh, hello, audience. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I am from Boston, Mass.
Hello, welcome to the FitCast. Sorry, UK listeners.
Yeah, go fast forward to the off topic, and then you'll understand.
Only people from England watch The Godfather and Wizard of Oz.
And The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
Oh, hello, wicked witch up the west. Why are you after me and my compadres?
Yeah. We swear to God, we have some good stuff for you guys this week. Wow. Oh, and speaking of crap, Jillian Michaels' game sold 700,000 copies.
Wow.
So far. 700,000 copies.
Wow.
Don't hate the player, hate the game.
Dude, bitch be raking in the dough, man.
Mm.
And the game sucks. Like, it's a bad game, but just, it's amazing. Like, her name is strong.
Strong.
Strong right now.
Strength.
Speaking of oomph, we got some t-shirts being made.
Very cool t-shirts.
Very cool t-shirts. And
very
they're,
cool.
I'm placing the order today, and we should be getting them in next week. And this is how we're gonna do it. All right, I'm only getting about text message. Holy crap! I don't think I can announce this, but that is some very cool news that I just got. Actually,
jeez.
We're gonna pause for 1 second. I gotta talk to John and Lee real quick. Okay, for people who want to hear the news, I will just say just keep a lookout in various fitness blogs, and you'll probably hear about it anyways. But I just don't want to tell people without that person telling people first. Okay, so anyways, t-shirts are being made, and I would like to get them out to you guys. And I went with a more expensive t-shirt because I would rather not get, you know, t-shirts that are going to fall apart and you guys have a really bad design on them and something that you would not wear in public. So what we did is we went with a black t-shirt, which we've talked about in the past, and it's a 50-50 cotton polyester. I think that's what it is. And those t-shirts are awesome, especially for the gym. They're very durable. They're not going to shrink on you. Like those cotton shirts, and the except like we were mentioned on Facebook, Tony is a big fan of the shrinkage of the t-shirts. Oh, shouldn't have said that. All right. Anyways, the t-shirts. What we're gonna do is I'm gonna order about 50 of them to start. Okay, and so we can keep ordering more. You know, eventually, I can't upfront tons of money. I don't have money bags in my bedroom under my bed. So I need you guys to, if you would like one, we're going to sell them. And we're going to do it pretty reasonable price. We're just going to say $18, and that's going to include shipping to United States and hopefully, you know, within reason to the rest of the world. We might have to bump it up a little bit, but for $18, I will ship it to you, and it will get you if you're in the, especially if you're in the United States or Canada, within a week. So that's how we're gonna do it right now. And we're not gonna give too many of them away because we're literally, like, I'm gonna be getting about 20 larges, 20 extra large, and like 10 medium, and that's gonna be about it.
Tony wants an extra small, I think.
Yeah, extra baby small.
Extra baby small.
Extra, and then he's just going to put them on each one of his arms and his legs. He's going to wear 4 shirts. I wouldn't pay to see that. But the t-shirts, like I said, they're being made this week, and I should get them, if not by the end of next week, early the week after that. So if you would like to get a t-shirt, the way that I'm going to be taking payment right now is either PayPal, or if you can email or mail a personal check, or like a money order or something like that, and I will give you all the details for that on the website, or just email me personally at kevin@thefakeass.com. And I want to start getting these out to people. I'll throw a picture on the show notes so people can see what they're going to look like. I think they're going to turn out really, really well, and you're really going to like how they come together. So,
yeah, they look awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Definitely.
Yeah, and huge thank you to not only the people that helped make logos that would work in a black t-shirt for something like Cafe Press. Like, you guys did a ton of effort with that. But also, shout out to JD at dollslettering.com. He's doing the t-shirts for us, and he actually made the first set of t-shirts a couple of years ago. So JD's been a huge help to us and on the show, and he's helping us out again here by cutting us a good deal with the t-shirts. So thank you, JD. Next thing I want to talk about, as we kind of talk right now, phase two of the Destination app. I have a dog. Sorry. phase two of Destination Abs is complete at this point, and people should be checking out the pictures week to week. Lee pointed out that I have lats on the most recent post, which is good.
Good lat growth.
Yeah. And Lee and I will probably do another special podcast next week about that. The another thing I want you to check out is, I'll put a link for this in the show notes, one of my online clients, Seth Gibson, also co-host of the other podcast that I do, parttimegamers.com podcast, has a blog where he's been posting his training log, and just to give him a little extra inspiration, kick in the ass, I want people to check it out. It's just a Blogspot thing. And I think everyone out there, you should be kind of keeping a log, whether it be in your personal Excel file, on someone's forum, or on the Blogspot blogs, because they're free. I don't see why you wouldn't otherwise just make it. You can throw it out there. You can boast about some great numbers that you got, or you can look for some extra inspiration from friends that you just link to the blog as well. But the big news is that Crank 2 came out this week. You would think this would be off topic, but it's not. It's not, because it's on the same level as a presidential election.
Wow.
So I think it's worth mentioning in the show. Like, for example, if aliens visited planet Earth, I'd probably mention it on the Fitcast, and same thing with Crank 2. It's on the same level, and I think everyone out there should see it. Jason Statham is back, and he's going to get a new heart. So good for him.
Too bad he can't get a new plot.
What's wrong with the plot? Kick people's asses for an hour and 20 minutes. I'm there. That's it. We're going to be right back with the mailbag. It is gigantic, and we're going to get through as much as we can, so stick around. If you want to boost muscle growth and blowtorch body fat, head over to turbulencetraining.com and also check out ttmembers.com, a monthly Turbulence Training website where you can get a new program every single month. Welcome to the mailbag this week. The first question that we have comes from Aaron. Hey guys, is this where I can ask questions for you guys to answer? Yes, it is, Aaron. This is for John and whoever else. Well, here it goes. I am about to start a lifting vertical leap program. The lifting portion will either be a format similar to Maximum Strength or a West Side for Skinny Bastards template. 4 days lifting a week, upper lower split. The vertical program will consist of sprinting 3 to 4 times a week and plyometrics 1 or 2 times per week. I try to follow precision nutrition as much as I can. My main goal is to increase strength and vertical within a 3-month period. Is it smart to try to do all this at the same time? I am in pretty good shape. My last year of workouts has been mostly programs written by Cressy. Is there an alternative workout plan if what I plan on doing isn't smart? Any other comments on gaining vertical would be great too. Love you guys and looking forward to the answer. Thanks. John, what do you think? Let's talk about vertical leaps first, and let's talk about strength programming.
Well, there is a Kelly Baggett's vertical jump.
Yes, definitely.
Vertical jump Bible or something like that. And from what I've heard of it, I never saw the program. What I've heard, it's pretty good. And just in general, it's just if you're trying to increase your vertical, it's an increase of power and it's an increase of strength, and you're really looking at power there. So West Side for Skinny Bastards is a good workout. Eric's Maximum Strength is obviously a good workout program, but make sure that you're developing power. Otherwise, you're not really being specific. And although you will get results from it, would you get as good results if you were being very specific on this is what I need to improve, and I'm going to go about it with a program that's specifically designed to improve that. So
Kelly Baggett's book, if people want to look it up, is just simply at higher-faster-sports.com. John, also, in how much is nutrition going to factor into this, Lee?
If you're overweight, it's obviously going to decrease your ability. So if you need to you know, lose any sort of fat to help with that, then that's going to be a factor. Maybe look at your nutrition in that aspect. But rest of it there, I mean, I hate to keep it simplistic, but if you're eating like a balanced diet, you're getting in, you know, your macros, you're you know, putting it around your workouts and stuff like that, then you should be good to go. I there's something like specifically nutritionally that I think you need to do for jumping. You know, I think it all goes kind of.
You don't want to,
you know,
sports pick up jump juice.
I don't know, maybe.
Jump juice. I mean, there is the fact that at the high levels, what a coach and nutritionist team will try to do is try to decrease body fat while maintaining or potentially increasing, you know, the performance. But
absolutely,
that's at the highest level. So that's the kind of thing where people get a hold of it and go, well, you know, if I really dial in my nutrition, can I get this much better? It's like you could probably get a lot more out of it if you were just focused on whatever it is that you're trying to accomplish, because the performance factor there is – the variable there is probably enormous. But like Lee said, if you've got 10, 20 extra pounds that you're carrying around and you lose it, that's 10 or 20 extra pounds that you don't have to jump with, and that
exactly.
will –
Yeah, exactly.
So
–
Steve has a great question about the trap bar. He says, I have a low back, L4, L5, about a low back. And he's talking about his lumbar spine, but would love to deadlift. I just purchased a Hex trap bar because the description said it's easier on your low back for deadlifting. And I would appreciate some input. Anything different to consider when using a Hex bar? So I don't know if we need to get in the discussion of too deeply about the discussion between just straight barbell deadlifting versus trap bar deadlifting, but in terms of being easier on the low back, John, what's the hex bar going to do for Steve?
The hex bar basically just starts you up in a more upright position versus like a traditional deadlift with a bar. So if we're looking at bad backs, there's no such thing as a bad deadlift for a back. The problem is there's bad deadlifting technique. Mm-hmm. So most of us don't have the mobility, the hip mobility, to actually get low enough. So when we have arguments on forums about, oh, I squat ass to grass, I squat this and that, it's not really – it doesn't matter – from the standpoint of how low you get, it's how low you can get safely. When we don't have good mobility, we'll have lumbar flexion because of it. We won't be able to move our hips well enough, so the low back will start to curve in compensation. When that happens, you're opening yourself up for disc herniation and back pain and increased stress. So a hex bar, the position should allow you to be a little bit more upright. So in that sense, yes, it is safer for the low back. We still have compressive forces from muscular coactivation, so there is still pressure on the spine and the disc. That doesn't go away. But in general, any type of a general disc program, if you come to rehab and you say, I have herniation, the idea is for low back stability. So if that's the case, absolutely a trap bar can help. But you still have to make sure that your form is there and that your form is proper, and still have to work on your hip mobility, still have to work on your lumbar spine stability through stabilization, plank and pale-up press and all those kinds of stabilizing ab exercises. And you still have to work on your thoracic mobility. So none of that goes away. It's just that the trap bar, because of that position, may be a little bit safer in the beginning. Having said that, though, still make sure that you're moving the hips, not the back, that you're, you know, squeezing through the glutes and through the posterior chain, and that you're not going too much into like a knee dominant type of squat or deadlift. So all that stuff still remains. It's still the same stuff we've been saying over and over again. But yeah, I mean, if I had a disc patient like that, that it would be a good option to maybe take a trap bar as a transition to a traditional bar deadlift, if that's what the goal was.
What about instead of for people that don't have a trap bar or a hex bar available to them, what about doing something like a rack pull instead, just starting a little bit higher off the ground?
You can do a rack pull. Rack pulls tend to be a little bit more specific to the low back, though, because of the position. Because you have to set the bar, the rack, in such a way that you're getting enough room to actually use the hips. Otherwise, a lot of times people will just use their back just out of, you know, poor movement. But you can do that too. And again, it's not that it's a bad exercise. You just have to be able to do it properly for it to be a good exercise for you. Rule of thumb, though, especially with disc herniation, you normally we're talking about nerve
issue too, because you can have a herniation and not know about it and have no symptoms. But if you feel pain from doing an exercise, you stop that exercise immediately. You don't try to push through, especially when you have known pathology. So, you know, don't be a hero. Don't say, oh, I just got one more set. I got a little twinge, but I should be fine. Don't do it. Mm-hmm. Stop and assess your form or the exercise. You just may be doing too much weight, a bad exercise for you at that time, or your form may be off. You can't take chances.
Lee, the next question that we have comes from Corey, who gave us pretty much the most descriptive address ever, Sunshine Coast, Queensland, Australia.
Yeah, that was cool.
Hi, guys. I'm starting out as a personal trainer and was just wondering what you, Lee, and John do as part of your complimentary, if you offer that, or initial session with a new client. I am having trouble converting complimentary sessions to paying clients. So how do you give potential clients that wow factor and get them to see value in paying for a personal trainer? Thanks for a great podcast. I learn new things every week, Corey. And I think this is a great discussion.
It's starting
get a little bit harder and harder and harder to get new clients as, to be honest, the economy is shit. So, Lee, what will you do with a new client who is coming in for something like an assessment to you know, not necessarily to sell them on the on the programming, but to kind of get them on board?
Well, I have what I classify as two types of clients. I have clients that I use in a helping manner where I just come in every once in a while. They need help on this and they need help on that. They're not ongoing clients. And that's kind of very low on my level of training, but I do have some of those. Most of my clients, though, I don't train you unless you're with me. Like, we don't train. We don't do anything unless you are signed up and you're with me. So I do a chat or like a phone chat. I do some sort of like base introduction. Like, it can just be 10 minutes to where I get an understanding of who you are and if we're even going to mesh. And then if it seems like we're going to mesh, then I'm like, okay, well, you know, why don't you come in, or, you know, I can even come to you, whatever the situation is. And I say, well, we're going to talk and we're going to see what your goals are. We're going to see what you want and if we're fit. And so in that session, I talk to them and I see what it is that they want. I let them do the talking. I let them tell me what they want me to do for them. And then if I feel that I can do it for them, I tell them that I can do it for them. And I tell them this is the yes or no thing. You're either in or you're out. We're on or we're not. And I tell them how much it's going to be. And it's just as simple as that. I mean, 90% of my clients are referrals. So most of them have some sort of like base understanding of who I am in the first place. But I don't know. I go into it with a very, this is what it is. This is what I can offer. Do you want it or not? And it works for me. And I just keep it very real. I don't try and really do any like sort of like strategies. You know, I just tell them what I can do. I show them what I've done. And if you don't have that, like let's say you don't have like a record or a client record, then the best thing that you can do is just keep it real and ask for an opinion right there. Don't let them go away and be like, oh, I need to talk to my husband. And don't do any of that. Yes or no. Are you in or are you out? Because they're either impressed with you and they want to jump on board or they're not. But they're going to pretty much know in that instance. I'd be curious to hear what John is to say being in his field. But I know that in my particular area and what I do, that I just go for the yes or no. And I just right there, put it right out there. And then after that, we get into our thing. And I've never, you know, if it doesn't work out, it's later on, or if it's because it just wasn't a mesh of personalities or, you know, whatever. But it's not a problem. I'm still getting more and more clients, even during our bad economy. So, you know, I definitely look at that angle. Don't be desperate. Don't ever appear desperate. Maybe.
John, what do you have to say?
Yeah, that was really good. I mean, I think Lee hit a bunch of really good points, especially about just, you know, being real and being true to yourself. Same thing with like dating, right? You meet a girl and you want to wow her, so you're going to try to present yourself and, oh, I'm perfect, I'm whatever. And then, you know, a month down the line, they're going to find out that you're a slob and you live at home with your mom. So, you know, no offense, Kev. But so – they're going to, you know, you got to just present yourself as who you are. Now, I think at the same time, though, you can always put your best foot forward. So if I have a new client, I don't have like free sessions or anything like that. And I think, you know, there is a difference, too. You can hear like what Lee does, but Lee's established and she has a track record. And she, you know, even mentioned that, you know, she's going off a lot of you know, people are recommending her. She has a track record. People can go out and look at articles and things like that. As a new trainer, you don't have that yet. So all you have is the fact you've got a shiny certification and hopefully your knowledge. So you've got to let that do the selling for you. You know, when you talk to a new client, you have that first initial session, you're going to be doing an evaluation. Tell them about what you're finding. Tell them why this is good or bad. Tell them how it relates to their goals and how this can either help or impede that progress, and then tell them how you can help to make that better. I mean, that's basically what it is. So if I'm doing an eval, my first sessions, that's what it is. It's an eval. Obviously, at this point, I'm going to have a few more tricks and a little bit more experience than the listener would. So I'm going to be able to do certain things, but just work up to your abilities and work within your scope of practice and be able to say like, oh, you know, I noticed this, or you're a little weak here and this might, you know, make it harder for you to do this exercise or that exercise. And if you want to lose weight, that'll be a problem, but you know, we can make this better. Let's go find out how to do that now. And give them something tangible that they can take home and go, wow, that was a great workout. And he sure seemed knowledgeable. Maybe I should go hire him and get a few sessions out of him. So just impress them with your abilities and show them why you can provide something that they can't provide for themselves.
I think those are such good points. And I think that you're so right about, the new trainer and the aspects. So to throw in maybe just one or two more points, then when you're talking with someone in that kind of a situation, they're really vulnerable. They don't know you. You aren't friends, you know, but they're disclosing stuff to you that they don't tell their friends, that they don't tell like their family. And it can get really emotional for them. And so one of the best things that you can do is really, really listen. Don't have your, like, you know, your cards ready and your progression and whatever certification, like, I'm going to go to step one, step two, step three, you know, in mind. Just kind of take that back a little bit and really look at the person and say, you know, how can I help you with what you're telling me? And really listen and then really feedback to what they're giving you. And if you can end a session or a meeting or anything like that with a conversation and you really getting to understand that person on some sort of level, then chances are you're going to have a client. And I think that John's points were like really dead on.
With at Boston Sports Club, what we generally do is, and I'm guessing it's very similar at many other health clubs, but every new member gets a free 45-minute orientation session with a personal trainer. And there's also the tri-packs, which are $80, and they're a 45-minute session and two 30-minute sessions. And in those times, not only, I mean, as a trainer going into it, what I found is that I generally use that first 45-minute session, whether it be that orientation or the tri-pack session. And again, I take them through a fitness assessment. I take them through a not really a barrage of things. I'll take a handful of, you know, mobility drills. I'll take a look at core stability. You know, sometimes I'll look at their upper body strength. But as soon as, I mean, John's talked about how Bill Hartman's mentioned this before, but as soon as I kind of shake their hand and I see them once they walk up the stairs, I kind of start looking at them and seeing what's going on, because you can pretty much tell right off the bat what will be going on when they're walking, especially when you look at their posture. A lot of your clients that are going to come in, unless they've been staying pretty active, are going to have poor posture from doing what everyone seems to do for a job now, which is work at a desk job, work in an office. And there's not that many people that are going to be coming into you that are, you know, like outside rec staff members that are always on the move. It's usually going to be people that don't move much at all. So that's one of the first things. But I think it's tough, because you're going to have to, and you guys, we can talk about this a little bit and go a little bit longer on this, but it, kind of hitting a balance between giving them an assessment, you know, selling them on saying, you know what, this and this is wrong, you know, with your mobility, or you know, if you look at their core strength, they can't hold a plank for 15 seconds and they have low back pain. Okay, those are kind of linked together. We can talk to them about that, but I see clients that come in here, you know, clients that come into a gym that just literally, like, they don't care about that stuff. There's some people that just will come in and they just want you to kick the crap out of them for 45 minutes. And if you take them through an assessment where they're not sweating or, you know, they don't see a difference at the end of it, they're going to be kind of skeptical. They're going to be thinking you, well, this is just me personally, but they kind of look at you as more of a rehab guy and less of a personal trainer that's going to help them lose weight. Everyone wants to lose weight. They don't necessarily go into the gym saying, oh, wow, you know, I would love it if I could, you know, I was standing up straight right now, or I would love it if, you know, I could do perfect lunges. Like, that's not something that they have in their head when they come into the gym.
No.
But when you can just get, like, a nice balance, like, have them come in, and literally what I'll do is I'll sit down with them, like Lee said, have them talk to you, have them tell you exactly from their mouth what their goals are. What are they trying to obtain within the next 3, 6, or 12 months? What do they want to get out of not just personal training, but why are they even coming into the gym? Why are they signing up for $60 a month to just step into a gym? Why are they even here? They might just want to do aerobics classes. They might not want a personal trainer. So once you do that and get a little bit of a background about prior injuries and things like that, take them out on the floor, give them a kind of a mini assessment, because you really don't have that much time in those 45 minutes to take them through everything that you wanted to do. Like, ideally, I would want to have someone do some walking lunges so I can look at hip mobility. Okay, some people can't even do lunges when they walk in the door. What do you do then? You know, you might have them do overhead squats. Okay, they can't even get down halfway. What do you do then? So those are some things that you can kind of point out to that potential client, being like, oh man, like, look at you're doing those overhead squats and your knees were just caving in right off the bat. Like, that's pretty much because you have poor glute strength. Like, glute med clearly isn't firing for you. So this is what we could do, this, this, and this. And once we get this done, you know, you're going to be on track to having some great fat loss workouts. And I'm going to say fat loss workouts because I haven't had one client not come to me asking for fat loss. So I don't know, but I'll go back to you, John. Do you find you kind of have to get, like, a balance? Like, there's some trainers that seem to just kick the crap out of their clients. They don't do any of this stuff. They don't do any real assessment. Like, they might do the stuff from the ACSM. Like, they'll do a push-up test, a sit-and-reach test. They'll do a, you know, like, a overhead squat test, like, literally on a BOSU ball. And they will just pick up a client by kicking the crap out of them and just having them be cooked at the end of the workout.
Yeah, but you know what? That gets into more of an argument about where the industry is in general. I think basically, like, right now, and, you know, the industry goes through different types of waves. So you've got the bodybuilding phase that, of course, is still very relevant in the field. You've got this kind of rehab, stability, functional, quote unquote, type of crap. And now it's like a very much like a sport assessment. Everyone's a coach. No one's a trainer anymore, kind of thing. And what happens is you get trainers that are sort of, they're in an identity crisis because they haven't been really trained to do these things, but they're trying to do them anyway because they feel that these are good ideas.
Yeah.
You have to be true to what you're capable of. I mean, if you've done, you know, if you've been educated in certain rehab techniques or you're through your experience or whatever, you're able to see those things, then absolutely pursue them to your ability. But if you're not, don't pretend that you can and try to just go out and do it. At the same time, if nutrition, that's another part of it. You know, trainers are expected to understand a little bit about nutrition. They might read a few articles, they do a few things, and suddenly they consider themselves to be educated nutrition experts and they're giving diets out to clients. It's not within your scope of practice. So you're absolutely right. You see some trainers are doing absolutely nothing in terms of corrective. Other trainers, it's like their whole bag. It's like, I'm a corrective specialist. And you have to understand where your knowledge is, what you're capable of doing, and what you're not capable of doing. So for the trainers that are just sort of doing a warm up, you know, an ACSM protocol, you know, warm up 5 minutes on the treadmill and no, yeah. you know, nothing having to do with mobility, well, maybe they should educate themselves into the advantages of doing mobility exercise. But at the same time, if they're not, they don't understand it, that in some ways I'd rather them do the treadmill warm-up, because they could just as easily harm a client by not understanding the exercise that they're providing rather than not doing it at all. Sometimes that's the better option because you just don't know enough to do it yet.
Yeah, I think one of the big mistakes a lot of trainers are making is if you two things. There should be at least two rules for when you have a prospective client. A, when they come in for that orientation, do not have them touch a machine. If you have them touch a machine, you're worthless. Because what you do is you have them go into a machine and there's pictures on the side of the machine. They don't need you for that. You're worthless. Like that, mm-hmm. that doesn't give you value. It just says, based on my knowledge, you should be doing leg extensions. So I'm going to put you on the leg extension machine and I'm going to stand there while counting the reps. That's mm-hmm. not going to really show them that you have much value. And the other rule is if you get through with that assessment and they feel better, they just feel, like I'll have clients that will come in and, you know, we'll just go through foam rolling. And at the end, they'll be like moving their arms around, like, wow, my upper back feels a lot better. Or we'll do some planks and they'll be like, oh wow. You know, they'll just start doing planks on their own for a week and they'll come back in saying, oh yeah, that stuff that you gave me, back pain's gone away. Can we talk a little bit more about personal training? Like things like that. That's something that will stick in your client's head permanently. And mm-hmm. you should make sure you follow those every single time. And we should probably wrap this up, but Lee, do you have anything else you wanted to throw in there?
I think that the number one problem I see other trainers do is they are trying to make the client do what they want to do. They're not trying to have the client do what the client wants.
Oh, totally.
And I notice some degree that we have to be the same because, you know, they're coming to us, they're paying us money. But I see all these guys, you know, putting clients through the ringer to achieve things that they don't even want to achieve. Some people don't want to try and be faux athletes at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. You know, some people don't want to try, and some people just want to feel better and they want to look hotter and they don't want to feel chastised about that simply because they don't really care about what the word functioning and mobility means. They don't mm-hmm. care. And you can try and do the best you can to implement things and explain things along the way. But I think one of the areas where I've learned best to work with my clients is to just really ask them, what do you want? And then I say to them, okay, I'm going to give you what you want. Along the way, allow me to teach you some things and maybe we can kind of just, you know, see where we meet in the middle. And I don't try and make them feel, I don't use big words, like I can say them well anyway, but I don't use big words and I don't, you know, I really try and, because I have before and they look at you like, what did you just say? And then they feel stupid. And sometimes you have to take a step back and you just kind of have to go, what am I really trying to, who am I trying to impress? You know, like, what am I trying to do here? And just really each client, each goal, you know, each dream that they have. And I just think it's so much more psychological than anything else. And the more that you are good with people and that you learn how to care about the people, the better that your whole training time is going to be. And you really weed out the people that you don't want to work with. And you, you know, understand how to get client after client after client that you want to actually work with. So, yeah, just don't try and force anything on people, and I think you'll get a lot further.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that helps you out. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more questions in the mailbag. If you want to get the best-tasting, highest-quality protein powder out there, you got to go to blackstarlabs.com. Now with new discounted prices, so you can save more than ever. Okay, we said that this is going to be a lightning round, and the lightning round effectively starts right now. That's my lightning sound. The next question comes from Jeff. I plan to respond to John's questions about which listeners are stretching. I know that it is too late, but wanted some feedback about stretching duration. I tore my distal patella tendon about 1 year ago and was able to dodge surgery by aggressive stretching. The ortho doctor had me stretch 2 times per day, quads and hamstrings, 10 sets, 30-second holds per leg. 2 months later, the tear healed. But the doctor informed me that as long as I strength train, stretching must be part of my daily routine. I tried to get some maintenance guidelines, but the doctor really didn't have any definitive advice. I currently still stretch my quads, hip flexors, and hamstrings every morning, 3 sets of 20 seconds each leg. Then I stretch the entire body after strength workouts 2 to 3 times per week, and interval workouts also 2 to 3 times per week for about 10 to 15 minutes to cool down. I'm not trying to discontinue stretching because I have proven that it should be part of my exercise plan, but I would really like to know what is adequate for maintenance. Or as usual, does it depend on the individual? Do I still need to include the AM stretching or is the evening stretching enough? I just want to make sure that I'm not wasting my time going beyond what is necessary. I'm 45 years old and I've been training for 5 years. Jeff.
Yeah. You know, it's stretching, and there have been some studies on how much stretching that needs to be done. In general, it will depend somewhat on your activity level and what you're doing during the day. If you're sitting down all day long, then pretty obviously you're going to have to stretch a little bit more than if you're upright, active, and mobile throughout the day. General rule of thumb, what your physician gave you actually is not that bad of a plan as far as let me look it up here. Yeah, 10 sets, 30 seconds per leg. I mean, that's a little bit excessive. You can break that down a little bit more in the day. I'd say more times is better than fewer times. So 2 times a day for 10 sets, really, that might be a little bit excessive. You could probably do more like, you know, 3 or 4 times for like 3 sets each for 15 to 30 seconds hold per leg. There is some difference in the literature as far as how much you have to stretch and the duration of the stretch and how much of a factor that is. So in general, those basic guidelines tend to be reasonable as far as their recommendations. So I would just say 3 to 4 times a day for, you know, 3 sets of 30 seconds each is probably more than enough. But also look at your positioning too. So when people give general stretching guidelines, in my opinion, this is not such a great idea, because if you're trying to affect position and affect posture, then what you're end up really doing is you're just theoretically increasing the flexibility of both sides of the joint, which means that you're not going to affect anything. So you need to get yourself in good position before you start to try to balance it through equal stretching. So you might give more time to, let's say, the hip flexors if you're sitting all day than you would the hamstrings, that which are already theoretically on stretch all day long just from the position of your hips. So just keep that in mind as well.
John, are you a doctor now?
I am, theoretically.
Dr. Fass.
Yeah.
So
yeah, when you walk into a room full of doctors, do you go, doctor, doctor?
No, I don't. No. A doctor, you know what, and quite frankly, you know what, I earned a degree, but I'm not a doctor yet. I still have a long way to go for that. So that's my degree.
I apologize for not addressing you as Dr. Fast. That was kind of
you know what?
A dick thing to
quite
do.
All right. So, quite all right. Don't really mind.
Lee, Chris has a great question for you. He says, hey, everyone, great podcast and keep up the good work. As an endurance runner, I usually do a long run every Saturday. This run is usually 18 to 20 miles. So a few weeks ago, that 2-plus-hour podcast was great. Yet when I come home from my long run, I find it hard to eat enough calories. I know it may sound strange, but I have to be eating close to 5,000 calories. I was wondering what would be some calorie-dense foods that would improve my recovery. I usually eat whole wheat and fiber-dense food items, but I found if I try to eat normally high fiber, I get a horrible stomach ache for my recovery immediately post-workout. Is either a cup of chocolate milk or whey protein powder?
I guess good.
Yeah.
I think you meant.
Sorry. Any help would be great. Also, is there any specific lifting program that you would suggest for long distance runners specifically that incorporate unilateral movements that would be able to improve running power and strength?
Since you're only doing this run every Saturday, I would pose to you the question. I wonder why you never considered maybe thinking about loading night before. you know, it's a simple thing that you can do, but it can help you. It can help you get through your run. And afterwards, yeah, you should eat. I don't know if you want to try and eat that much after you got done. Basically, eat. I mean, if you eat to the point of being uncomfortable, that's not going to help you anyway. So I say eat the night before really good. Eat before your run, best can. Feed during your run. You know, it's simple, but those gel packets, I mean, you can just carry them and pop them in. And, you know, they may not seem 100% optimal, but it is fuel. It is something that you can do. And then when you get home, you can eat. So that way that you're not putting it in just one big chunk of time. You know, and that's a lot to ask of your body to, I mean, you know, pro bodybuilders who are trying to stack themselves, they don't even try and do stuff like that. So not often anyway, and they don't usually get away with it when they can. So, yeah, I would just say try and vary the intake as far as what to eat. Stay away from high fiber. That's not the time that you want that. So I'm not saying necessarily you have to eat, you know, junk, but maybe just go for, you know, some white potatoes, you know, go for some, you know, just basic rice. Go for more calorically dense, you know, grains. It's not going to hurt you, and your body is certainly going to use it, unless you have some sort of problem with taking in those kind of foods. And try not to overthink it too much. Eat until you're comfortable. If the rest of your week is really primed and you're really trying to do everything you can to support your body and what you're doing, having this one day where you may go just a little bit below your energy requirements shouldn't be too bad, especially if the day before, the day after, and, you know, a little earlier doing that you try and get some good stuff in. So that's what I would go. And as far as a program, you know, it varies. I usually give program information based upon, like, kind of where your weaknesses are. But to you know, a lot of runners, they have a lot of quad dominance, they have a lot of weak glutes. So definitely any sort of program that can emphasize, you know, squatting, deadlifts, the you know, the big basics, but something that you know, really helps you improve where you could be lagging. It's a lot of pounding you're doing on especially on your legs too. So anything that has a, you know, a good mobility, you know, I would probably look at something like, even though it's not a runner's program, I've seen a lot of runners have some great results with maximum strength. It throws in really good, you know, mobility work, and, you know, there's foam rolling, and then there's, you know, big strength lift movements. So maybe even look into something like that, while not touted towards a runner, I think that it could give a lot of runner benefits, in my personal opinion.
Very good. Chris, hopefully that will help you out. And John, let's bounce back to the previous discussion that we were having about assessments and looking at femur's position while people are doing squats.
Yeah, we were just during the FitCast, during the recording, we tend to talk back and forth on like show notes through like a Skype chat window. So it was just, I just mentioned something to Kevin. He had said very quickly about glute medius. If someone's knees buckle in an overhead squat, maybe the glute medius is weak. So we were talking about it a little bit, and then we said, all right, let's just bring it into the show for to talk to the listeners about it. It's not the gluteus medius if the knees buckle inwards. Not that this is a major, major issue, because if that happens, the idea is just let's try to keep the knees out. So it doesn't matter if you know what muscle it is or isn't. But that does come into effect for trainers, as well as for, you know, just people that see this happening to themselves and are trying to fix themselves. The thing with muscles and the things with biomechanics is you can read an anatomy book and it'll say, all right, the gluteus medius is responsible for hip abduction. Mm-hmm. So then you see the knee falling inwards in an internal rotation and you say, well, the gluteus medius is obviously weak then, because if you're walking and that happens, which is called a Trendelenburg gait, when you are not able to stabilize the contralateral hip, the opposite side of your stance leg. So if I've got all my weight on one leg and then my hip buckles out, the gluteus medius is responsible for that. The problem occurs, though, is assuming that happens in all positions, and it doesn't. When we move naturally, the joint position will affect the ability of specific muscles to actually do the activities that they're described as doing. So as you delve deeper into biomechanics, and don't make any mistakes, I'm not some kind of biomechanical master here, but when we change the position of that joint, muscles may not be able to do something, or they may do something completely differently. A good example of that is the hip adductors, and this is a kind of famous example of it. Stupid clam exercise machines that unfortunately a lot of women seem to do, where they're, you know, bringing their legs inwards and they think they're working their inner thighs. In that position of hip flexion, two out of the three muscles of the hip adductor group are not actually working. So they think they're doing something and they're not. All they're really doing is emphasizing poor movement strategy, and they're causing imbalances in the hip adductors. So the example of the glute medius, once we start to break into hip flexion, and I believe – I'd have to look it up, but I believe it's somewhere between 15 and 20 degrees of hip flexion, which is not a whole lot. The position of the gluteus medius is no longer a good muscle to abduct or to externally rotate the hip. So now we're looking more at the gluteus maximus. We're looking at lateral hamstrings, so the biceps femoris, long and short head, and will be – in a good position to do that. We're looking at a muscle called the sartorius, which crosses the joint and crosses in front of the thigh. And then we're looking at like lateral gastrocs and sartorius on the the plantar flexors on the in the calf. Those will have a little bit more effect on where the knee is actually positioned during our squat. So not a big deal, but if I think that I can stand up and do some hip abduction, if I can swing the leg out, and that'll strengthen up the gluteus medius, and that should fix the problem when I squat, it's not going to do that. And that's where it gets important. So you do have to pick your exercises properly, and you also have to think in terms of functional relevance. So if I'm trying to fix a position, then I should probably exercise within that position. I shouldn't try to necessarily isolate out a muscle in order to fix a position somewhere else down the line. The only time isolation comes into effect is if that muscle is dysfunctional or so weak that it's just not doing its job at all, in which case we need to start to mechanically and neuromuscularly develop that muscle to the point where I can start to use it in more advanced positions, like a squatting position. So that was the whole discussion there. And so maybe people enjoyed that, or maybe people just fell asleep, but that's what it is.
Don't worry. I'm going to leave my bunker now after you drop that knowledge bomb, so we can ask the next question from Dan.
The soleus, by the way, is what I was thinking, not sartorius. The soleus is in the plantar flexor, gastroc soleus complex.
Gotcha.
Just, yeah.
Next question comes from Dan. He says, hi, Kevin. I've been getting a few shoulder problems, nothing major, but some sharp pains when back squatting. I know the alternative is front squat, but I just can't quite get the movement. So far, I have abandoned barbell benching and started using dumbbells. I've also been doing lots of push-ups to try to sort things out. Do you guys have any ideas? John, what do you think Dan should be doing?
Just trying to catch up on the question here. Shoulder problems. That's probably more than likely a shoulder mobility issue. Sharp pains when back squatting, you know, that's hard to say. I mean, where's the sharp pain? Yeah. If I assume, you know, if there could be a lot of things going on that cause that, in for the most part, and you can see a lot of coaches or trainers talk about the difference between a front squat and a back squat. I know Mike Boyle and a few others have talked a lot about the fact, I think Eric does too, Eric Cressy, they've not necessarily abandon back squatting, but for the majority of their clients and their athletes, they really don't have them do that because they just don't have the thoracic mobility and the scapular stability to be able to get your arms that far behind. I don't disagree with that either. I've over time, I've moved for myself as well as for the majority of my clients. They're pretty much exclusively doing front squats because they just don't have the mobility to be able to get into a good locked position in a back squat. If you have that mobility, you can do it. So the general issues that we see. There could be some anterior impingement, posterior impingement. You could have anterior instability. Subacromial impingement or anterior instability. There could be so many other things going on. In general, though, it's like a thoracic mobility type of sequence, lumbar stability, and get into your scapular positioning. So that's like the inside out DVD type of stuff, which you can pick up if you don't have already, and that can tend to be pretty helpful. As far as actually being able to do a front squat, some people will find that cross arm position to be more comfortable. I find it more difficult to actually have good control of the bar when you do it, but at the same time, it also requires a great deal of wrist flexibility in order to do a proper front squat. So if you're having trouble with like an Olympic weightlifter front squat, then you can try a cross arm and that might be better. Barbell benching is probably not a good idea with shoulder problems. Dumbbells might be better. Push-ups might be a lot better. In general, it's, again, hard to necessarily say what's going on because you don't know what's happening at the shoulders. If the scapula are in a good position, then there's no reason why you can't at least dumbbell bench press. If the scapula are in poor position, you may want to abandon that stuff for a while and go exclusively to closed chain position and also for very specific training so that you're getting better scapular mobility before you overload it and blow past it in something even as relatively simple as a push-up.
Lee, I have a question for you in regards to sleep. And the question comes from Colleen, who I think it might be the same Colleen who's from the UK. My friend had a baby 6 weeks ago and is having a very hard emotional time. Whoops, I'm reading the wrong question. Wrong baby question. My bad. Sorry. It's actually from Matt. Do you have any recovery tips for making gains in the gym while tending to a newborn? My son is sleeping pretty good, and I'm able to get 3 to 4 hours of sleep at a time. For my training program, I'm doing Waterbury's Huge and a Hari Strength program, and the workouts are quick and efficient. For supplements, I use a multi, vitamin C, and fish oil. I was thinking of trying ZMA for better sleep and Spike to get me through the day and through my workouts. Are there any other supplements you should recommend? Also, what would you think if I consumed a shake during the night when I was up with my son? Normally, I would not interrupt my sleep to drink a shake, but since I'm going to be up, I was thinking about thinking it would help my recovery. I make a homemade shake consisting of cottage cheese, plain yogurt, milk, berries, olive oil, and either walnuts or pine nuts. Thanks for the suggestions you may have.
You know, whenever it comes to a situation like this, or really any training situation, what you have to focus on the most is what is your breakdown to recovery ratio. You know, how much breaking down are you doing to the body, and then how much recovering are you doing? Because to not have a balance is one thing is going to be neglected. You know, you don't train hard enough, you don't get any results. You train too hard, you don't rest enough. You know, what you need to look at is you need to look at, you know, how hard are you resting towards how hard you're pushing. And it looks to me as if the sleep is getting kind of, you know, neglected because you're taking care of your son and, dietary habits might be going through a little off because, you know, of situations and where you're at. So the best thing that you're going to be able to do to increase your gains beyond just making sure that you're programming right. So let's assume that your programming's right, that you're doing the right program and you're eating for it. Because in order to get huge and in order to get huge in a hurry, you have to be...
I knew you were going to do that. That's
And you have to be eating for it. You know, you have to be lifting hard and you have to be eating for it. So make sure that you're dialing in on that. You're eating hard enough. As far as if you're already up, then yeah, there's nothing wrong with having a shake. As far as, trying to take ZMA at night to sleep and Spike to stay awake, it's kind of tricky. I mean, you know, you could try it and everything, but, basically what you're doing is you're compensating. And there's only so many compensations that you can make before, you're taking out so much of what your natural body signaling is kind of, you know, doing for you. So you can toy with it, yeah, and you can kind of play with that and see if it can get you through this period that you're just trying to get through. But at the end of the day, when you get a chance to rest, just rest. Don't try and push yourself too much. You know, when you get a chance to just, you know, eat well and take care of your body, do those things and don't try and push it to that next level. You can only do so much in your situation, but basically you just got to maximize anything that you can and eat when you can eat, sleep when you can sleep well, and you know, don't try and take out any sort of unnecessary strain to your body and other aspects of your life and put all your focus on taking care of your kid and then trying to, you know, gain within this programming. So, yeah.
Speaking of food, we're going to take a quick break because the next question is about food. No, sorry, that's a bad transition. We'll be right back.
Hold on, John. Calm down. Michael Boyles, strengthcoach.com, the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet. Are you looking for cutting-edge information updated almost every day? Do you like info-packed forums with almost real-time answers from industry experts? Then log on to www.strengthcoach.com. For only $1 for 14 days, you can test drive the number one source of performance enhancement information on the internet, strengthcoach.com. Have you logged on today?
Mike has a question about protein shakes. He says, I have a question about protein shakes. Do I absolutely have to take them to gain muscle and strength? I hate the way they taste. Right now I'm eating ProMax protein bars, chicken, and tuna for protein. Is there anything more I can do or any suggestions on other ways to get a lot of protein? And Mike, it's the lightning round, so I'm going to just shoot down a list. Chicken, turkey, other white meat, fish, beef, you know, meat, Greek yogurt's good. If you're on the run, prepackaged turkey or chicken from my good friends at Trader Joe's, eggs, nuts got some protein in there. Blackstarlabs.com. No, I'm just kidding.
Remember the 1950s before they came up with protein shakes, bodybuilders and strength people, whole milk and meat.
Well, yeah, you know, you don't have to just stick with shakes at every meal. Like people, you really got to watch out on the over-reliance on a protein powder and water to get you size and strength. And if you really look at it, if you're throwing in two scoops of protein and water, what are you talking about, 250 calories for a meal? If you want to get bigger and stronger, that's not going to help you out too much.
Nope.
All right, the next question we have. So the answer is no, Mike. Just try to get as much whole food as possible, even, you know, before and after your workouts. Those can be whole food options as well. Here's Colleen's question. My friend had a baby 6 weeks ago and is having a very hard emotional time dealing with the weight. She's always been tall and skinny and able to maintain it while eating whatever she wanted and not working out. About 3 years ago, she started running and did a triathlon, but it was never for fat weight loss. She has cut baked goods down to one time a week and is back running and has a half marathon this weekend, which I'm very proud of her working back up to doing. She has done two previously. She asked for my advice on how she can lose the weight. My biggest thing has been to tell her that it will take time and remind her that it took 9 months for her body to put it on. It will take some time to get it off. She's really frustrated because, unlike me and lots of our friends, she's never had to regulate what she eats or worry about her weight. She's eating much better now. Asshole told her to add in some weight training and do some interval training. Being that I have never been pregnant, I don't know what to tell her exactly. Can you give me some advice to pass along? I'm sure MSN has lots of weight loss tips from quote experts, but I'd like to come from someone who knows something, Colleen. So Lee, what do you have for Colleen?
I'll try and keep it quick.
For the post-pregos.
I see this a lot. The women who never had any problems, they got to eat through college, they got to eat through high school, nothing happened, and then something happened. It can be a new job, it can be the baby, like something comes and it throws their world into a skew, and all of a sudden they have to worry about what, you know, a lot of other women or men had to worry about, like, all their lives. And in some ways it can be almost worse because they're just left dumbfounded and they have absolutely no idea. The very best thing that you can do is just explain to her that what fat loss is, what it takes to achieve it, and how to achieve it, and not overcomplicate things. These are the kind of women that end up finding out the weirdest diets on the face of the earth and trying them because they're just left dumbfounded. The best answer for these kind of problems is the actual answer and keeping it as simple as possible. So, you know, explain to her, look, you know, you ate in a surplus while you were pregnant, you know, to feed you and to feed your baby. Now you have to deal with the fact that you have weight that you gained during that. And what you have to do is you have to allow time to take it away. So, you know, you've got to explain it in really A, B, C kind of manner. And I think that when you do that, it kind of, okay, that makes sense. And so take it away. And yes, it's going to take time. And try and find a program that she might enjoy doing, you know, and you maybe you can get her the Body Fat Solution by Tom Venuto. It's at Amazon. It's at local bookstores. It's hardback. It's like $17. You can give her that. It's good information, and just be there to remind her of the common sense of it all and of the really simplicity of it all. And that's the best thing you can do as a friend. Don't let her get caught up in the hype of different kind of crazy fixes for things that just don't need to exist.
Yeah, and I think you made a great recommendation with Tom's book. I also recommended that to one of my clients who's just having a problem literally dealing with you know, just a love for chocolate. You know, and there was she found there was just certain things that kind of triggered that want for chocolate. So very good book. Can't recommend it higher, or I don't know how to say that. But the next question we have comes from Chris. And Chris, this is a lightning round, so we're only going to give you one. Hi, FitCast. I'm a dedicated listener, but I have to admit much of the information y'all provide goes over my head. I don't know where to start. In the spirit of your top five list, how about a top five for the bookshelf, getting started with fitness and nutrition? Thanks, Chris. John, one book that you recommend for people that just want to get a basic, you know, a starting knowledge on fitness and nutrition.
New Rules of Lifting.
Bam. Lee, one book.
I'll go with Body Fat Solution by Tom Venuto.
Damn it. All right. You know what I'm going to say? I'm going to say see John and Lee's answers. Next question that we have comes from Nick. Hey guys, I'll say maximum strength because I like strong, getting strong. The next question is from Nick. Hey guys, I was listening to some old episodes of the FitCast, and a couple weeks ago, Lee Peel was answering a question on the Master Cleanse diet. She said it would be better to do the diet with protein shakes, but I did some research and a lot of studies confirm that too much protein can harm your body, more than 30% of your daily caloric intake. I wanted to just clear that up so no one gets hurt. Thanks, you guys rock, and great results on the Destination Abs thing, Nick. So, Lee, why are you trying to kill our listeners? Like, come on. We need the subscribers.
I don't really care about you guys. I'm not going to babble on and on about this. There is only very, very few medical conditions that you could have in which that eating an excess amount of protein could be potentially harmful for you. Normally this has to do with a lot of more kidney problems, but thus far with the research that we've looked at, your body is made to break it down, and if you're a healthy individual, you can break it down just fine. How much that you need, you know, that's definitely arguable. You know, we don't need an insane amount of protein. It's funny because I'll go on a quick rant. We go from damning so many different macronutrients at so many different times that I don't even know what's safe to eat anymore. You know, you eat too much fat and it's going to do this. You eat too much protein, it's going to do this. You eat too many carbohydrates, it's going to do this. And it's at a point you have to step back and you know that, well, what's safe to eat? And if you want to try and skew results or research, you can find any sort of reason to not eat anything. Water, even. Don't drink water because that can kill you too. Anything in excess, in a severe excess, can be dangerous. I mean, that's anything. A carrot, water, anything. It doesn't matter. If you keep a sane amount of intake of anything, and if you keep the word moderation in your head and in your diet, you'll be fine. So to do something like the Master Cleanse, and if you wanted to do that, what, so you'd have 800 calories of protein? I mean, that wouldn't be that insane anyway. You'd be perfectly fine to do something like that. The average person, that would not hurt. But in general, my guidelines for people is if, you know, normal life, you know, 1 to 1.5 body weight and protein, and that's about it. If you're on a really harsh diet and you're really scared about protecting your lean body mass, you could, you know, maybe go to 2 if you really, really wanted to. Beyond that, you don't need to go any higher. So don't, you know, I also gave that idea as just to say, well, if you're going to do something like that and you're scared about losing body mass, well, then why don't you go ahead and just, you know, take in protein shakes. I don't really recommend to do that. It's not like I really think that you should go out and do that. But if you were going to do something like that, it would be better to do that. But it's not dangerous for the average person and for most people, actually, to have that kind of protein intake. And I just think that we need to stop being ridiculous about that kind of stuff.
I'm pretty sure you did preface that when you made that argument a couple weeks ago, too.
I think I did, but I don't know. I mean, and, you know, people listen to things that you know, any of us say, and they can take it very literal. So, I mean, I do have to be careful. But I don't really think that you should do the Master Cleanse diet with protein shakes. I don't really think that you should do that. But I was simply saying, if you were going to do something like that, a liquid diet or any sort of shake diet or things like that, you might as well, if you're concerned about losing lean body mass, use protein in your shakes. So that's what I was saying. But yeah, I'll just leave it at that.
If you want to get your colon cleansed, just take advice from the Clumps. I think they did it, you know, pretty effectively during that dinner discussion. See the Nutty Professor movie. Sorry.
Okay, because I didn't know what that was about just now.
Yeah.
Nutty Professor, man. God. They were all sitting around the table, and they were just like, yeah, I'm going to get my colon cleansed right now. And they were just ripped for it. Next question that we have. Sophie. What's up, Sophie? She's from the UK. Should I do it in my UK accent?
Oh, please don't. We'd like to keep our listeners.
Hi, all. I'm here from the UK and have only recently discovered the Fitcast. I'm currently loving the fact that I have a huge backlog of episodes to listen to during my drive to work. I'm not sure whether I am writing this question in the correct place or not. You are. I have a question regarding the debate between cardio and lifting. I've heard you guys talking about how much more effective lifting is compared to cardio in terms of fat loss, and I'm wondering exactly why this is. How is it, in terms of physiology, that shifting to a primarily cardio-based regimen to a primarily weights-based regimen, which with some cardio in there still, of course, can be much more effective? Sorry if this sounds like a really dumb question, but I am one of the listeners that is gradually starting to lift like a guy rather than engaging in excessive cardio every day. Is it just purely the muscle gain resulting in an increased metabolic burn, or is it the actual lifting exercise that burns more calories? Maybe you should shed more light onto my ignorance. Thanks very much, Sophie. P.S., can you please let me know how it is that I will receive a response via podcast, via email? It's via podcast, Sophie. You're listening to it right now. That's meta. So... Say hi to David Beckham for me. John.
God.
John, let's talk about strength training.
God. Are you sure? Are you sure you want to do that?
Or we could just say, see episode 100 and, or like every other episode. I think this is a common thing that people bring up quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, in general, it's not more effective, meaning that you're going to look better because you'll have some definition and shape. You do affect long-term fat burning, the you know, post-exercise oxygen consumption, so EPOC. You do affect that as well. Cardio-based running and stuff, it's just – To put it really simply, just go to the gym, look at all the people that are on the treadmills running all day long and see what they look like. If that's what you want to look like, then go for it. Because that's really what ends up happening. You will certainly lose fat. It's not an argument of whether or not you can run and lose fat or burn calories. It's an argument of what happens afterwards, what type of function do you look – you know, what are you looking for in terms of function? Running on a treadmill for long periods of time basically makes you good at running on a treadmill for long periods of time. So in the same time, you could be doing something that is – you know, has been argued to be at least equally as effective, if not more, and actually affect the positioning and strength of the body. So you're probably just going to look better on top of it. But it is more detailed than that, but this is a lightning round, so –
And being the lightning round, we're going to take one final question from Aaron. And this is a bonus question that I was jumping into the mailbag for. I'm a relatively newcomer to the Fitcast, so guess what? It's not the same Aaron as before. Having found it just a few weeks ago, I was looking for a fitness podcast to listen to while fragging noobs in Call of Duty. I figured if I was going to be wasting time, I might as well be enlightening myself in the process. Needless to say, the Fitcast rocks, and I've been burning through these past episodes like crazy. This is a question that has intrigued me for quite a while, and I would like your take on it. Working out in the morning versus at night and its effect on eating habits. I'm not sure this has been discussed in some way at some point before, but I really appreciate the feedback. I think Lee took a big deep breath. Oh, that was John. Two summers ago, I was fortunate enough to not be working for a span of about 4 hours during which I worked out in the morning. Since then, I've been employed and have been forced to work out at night, often as late as 8 p.m. I've never been able to duplicate the same gains I made during the time when I was working out in the morning, despite the fact that my overall diet is better. I'm better educated on proper form, less physically active, and less physically active during the day, usually in an office chair, versus frisbee golfing, jet skiing, and playing beer league softball. My theory on why has this been when you work out in the morning, beat out the muscles, then eat all day, your muscles uptake so many more of those nutrients than if you eat all day, work out, drink your post-workout shake, and get one meal and basically fasting for the next 7 to 9 hours of sleep. Does this have any merit, or am I off the reservation with this? So just basically, let's, Lee, working out at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m., is there a difference?
You know, there is going to be, on a small level, certain differences. It's kind of like, it's one of those things where it's like you do something at this period of time and you're going to have these pros and cons. And then if you do something at this period of time, you're going to have these pros and cons. So since this is the lightning round, each one has its own set of pros and cons. You know, anything from like what your hormones are doing to just your lifestyle habits. I mean, there's so many variables, which is, and there's so many different things for different people. We could never really come up with an answer for this. Like, there could never really be a definitive workout morning is better than workout night.
Yeah.
You know, we're never going to have that. So it really just depends on you. I would say I don't see it, but I think you said something like he's moving less now than
he
used to.
He seems to have a desk job now.
Okay. Well, I would say that, you know, maybe before you were just engaging and more active and, you know, kind of utilizing what, you know, you were doing with everything a little bit more. Maybe the fact that you're more stunted in your activity is more of an issue. Maybe you're not focusing on, you know, your nutrition, you know, with any sort of like real diligence. If you have some sort of con, then try and do your best you can to focus on, you know, being the opposite of that. So if you're not getting enough sleep, try and sleep more. If you're not eating enough, try and eat more. You know, like, just think about it in the most logical thing possible that you can. And if you need to eat before you go to bed more, then eat before you go to bed more. Try not to overthink it. Test some things, play it out, and just see what you can kind of do. But is there one that's better than the other? I mean, there's arguments for each side. Mm-hmm. So, and we'll never really, I don't think that we'll ever come to a definitive conclusion based on each person.
Yeah. And also, just to kind of repeat what Lee said a little bit. When we look at those studies and they say, okay, well, we have a release of this hormone is greatest at night and the release of this hormone, those are all things in isolation too. So they're not looking at people that are maybe overworking or undersleeping or overeating or undereating or whatever it is. They're trying to isolate out the specific hormonal response or whatever, because that's basically what that question is in a nutshell, is what's the best what's the best time for like an endocrine response or a hormone release. So generally speaking, right, like I could do all the research in the world and decide that, you know, 3:42 in the afternoon is the perfect time to work out, but if I'm at work, it doesn't really matter. Or if I work nights and I'm sleeping during the day, it doesn't really matter. So you just have to kind of see what the best time for you is. When are you the most active? When are you the most energetic? And then see if you can work out around those times. Otherwise, it's great to have that information, but it doesn't really amount to much when you can't fit it into a real world situation. So,
very good. Hopefully that helps out. And it's, again, it's sorry, I lost my train of thought because I was trying to find one more question, but I think we're going to end it there. So yeah, thanks for listening. You can check out John's stuff at acceleratedstrength.com. Oh, John, pink dumbbell.
Oh, the pink dumbbell. Yeah. That was a tough one today because they were really good questions. Someone had asked about what the pink dumbbell board actually is, and you know what? It is what it is. It's beyond comprehension.
Beyond definition.
That's right.
It's like the smoke monster.
Yeah, I thought that we had a great response with the personal trainer
Corey.
Complimentary. Yeah, I thought that was a really good one. There was one that we didn't get to that I
Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Load it up.
All right.
It's a lightning round one answer response.
One more.
Go for it.
The one from Matt?
Mike.
Yep.
Oh. I was looking at the jogging one.
Oh, did I miss one?
Yeah, the jogging question about jogging. This is
John. How about you ask it?
Okay.
I don't know where
question
it is.
About jogging. I'm 5'6" and 130 pounds. I'm looking to get cut. Sorry. I recently started jogging. Is it more beneficial to jog before I weight train or after? I've been jogging about 4 days a week after weight training. How long? How far should I be jogging, Mike? And this is the winner of the Pink Dumbbell Award. I'm telling you this right now. This is the winner. Mike, the answer is this. Stop jogging. Start eating. You're 5'6 and 130 pounds. Put on some muscle, pal. That's it. You're not looking to get cut. You're looking to put on muscle to have definition. At 130 pounds, you and I are basically the same height, and I outweigh you by 50 freaking pounds, dude. So please get in the weight room, lift some weight, get some muscle on. Don't worry about the jogging right now. You'll be all right.
Let's be fair, because Mike, I think Mike also asked about the protein part of the question. You know, I think to be fair, a lot of people will start coming into, you know, lifting and weight training and pick up a magazine, and this is kind of the stuff that they're seeing. Like, even when they're doing programs that are getting people big, there's like steady state cardio involved in them. So I'm just guessing, Mike.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
And not to be cruel. Like, I'm not trying to be cruel, but seriously,
you gotta
put on some weight. That's like, it's incredibly undersized. So please just start.
Do some calf raises, man. Calf raises.
Well, you know, if I could interject, I so often from guys, like, you know how like we always, and professional strength, we say this a lot, that you have to melt the fat off in order to reveal the abs. You know, we say that a lot, right?
Yeah.
You know, like that, or I don't necessarily say a lot, but you know, we say that a lot. And what a lot of people don't realize is that sometimes there's not anything underneath there. Because you haven't built it.
I will point towards me.
Well, no. And it's a perfect case. Like, you've never built it underneath there. And so you could diet down and diet down and diet down all you want. But if they're not there, you're not going to have them. And I always like use it as a visual. Like, I had this one guy and he could not get it. He could not get it. And then I was like, okay, dude, all right, take a bed, lay a sheet on that bed. Like, you have a flat bed and you lay a sheet on the bed and the sheet falls down and it's just completely flat. I'm like, okay, well, lift up the sheet, put a sack of potatoes underneath that sheet and lay that sheet back down. What happens? And there's going to be a bowl.
Ooh, I know.
John.
You're very funny. So I'm just saying, like, it's so like, really, but like, that's it. Like, there's nothing underneath that sheet of skin. Like, you don't have anything underneath there. And if you don't have anything underneath there, you can jog all you want. That's it. So I think that, I mean, it's a perfect answer you gave, John, but just to kind of like take it home, like you don't have anything underneath there. So, you know, you need to really focus on building up that muscle and eating. So.
And also just to, you know, a preemptive strike for all the haters that are like, you can't not jog. You have to have, you know, it's good for your heart. There is an enormous cardio respiratory effect of weight training. Don't believe the hype.
Lift something heavy and then, you know,
tell me that doesn't get your heart rate going.
Yeah, look at your heart rate after a set of six.
Yeah.
So
if you don't have a high heart rate, you're just doing it wrong, folks.
No. Exactly. So yeah, don't believe the hype. I mean, is it in a perfect world? Is it good to jog? I mean, theoretically, you know, cardiopulmonary at least, sure. But it doesn't mean that that's what you have to do. It doesn't mean that that's the only thing that you have that you can do to have an effect. There's an enormous effect of weight training, and you can even affect the type of weight training that you're doing in terms of rest periods and the type of strategies that you go into it to get more of a cardiorespiratory effect. Again, you do the way you train is the way that your body adapts. So if your job is to run 20 miles a day, then yeah, you should go train to run 20 miles a day. You'll be great at what you do in life. No one does that in life. So, you know, your job in life is basically lifting things up off the floor occasionally or carrying things and then basically undoing the effects of whatever it is you do sitting at a desk all day for 9-10 hours. So just think of it in those terms. And Mike, please, please, please eat a lot and go lift weights. You'll see much better results.
Yes, and leg press too.
I swear to God, I'm going to kill you.
All right. So that's going to wrap it up for the lightning round.
The lightning round, that wasn't.
That wasn't.
Okay. You win, Lee. That's going to wrap. That's going to wrap it up.
This might have been one of the longest, like, I don't even know how long I've been on right now.
Buck 45, man.
Buck 45.
So Buck 45. One yeah.
So that's going to wrap it up for us here. Like I mentioned John's site. I'm not going to give him another plug. You can check out Lee at avidityfitness.net.
I've only earned 2 plugs a show. I've used up my plugs.
And flzine.com.
Plug stamps.
Cha-ching. And that's going to do it for us here. Please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. Check us out at thefitcast.com. I'll probably have some stuff up there this week. And until next time, John.
Yes? You're waiting for me to put in my last 2 cents as you trail out so that I can be the last one talking?
Well, either that or you're going to go,
Yeah, well, I'm just waiting for you. If you say something that I think is interesting, I'll go,
All right, well,
or something fail.
Okay.
Fail, I'll at.
Okay, we're going to get out of here. We're going to go to see Crank 2 and see Jason Statham's washboard abs. We'll see you next week. Hey, at least Amy Smart's going to be topless in it, too. Plus one.
Plus one. God, I can't. I do that. So sad.
Yeah, you do, John. It's quite interesting.
Normally, people can't hear me because I'm not mic'd. So I guess I've never noticed that. No one else has pointed that out.
All right, I'm gonna start recording. Stop recording now. Hope people Goodbye. Enjoyed that.
Good night, Canada.
God, so we're talking about the Knicks, how they suck.
Yeah, the Knicks suck.
Yep. Okay.
I got nothing.
Okay. The off-topic discussion, myself, Lee Peel, Jay Fass.
Jay Fizzle.
Yeah, John.
Mm-hmm.
So what's up, guys? Hey, Crank 2 comes out Friday.
Yeah, it's lame.
Hey.
I get this invite on Facebook. Are you coming to the Crank 2 premiere? I'm like, no.
Shut up, really?
I sent it to him.
Why didn't you send me one?
Because I didn't know if you liked Crank.
I've told you my love for Jason Statham.
Okay, no, okay. Well, then maybe just subconsciously I knew you were going to see it anyways.
Whatever.
Is that okay?
Yeah, fine.
Okay.
I'm going to see it. I'm excited.
Dude, I might be seeing it tonight. If I see it tonight, I will come back with a full report on later next week. But it got a 69% on Rotten Tomatoes. Like, that's really good.
That's actually better than I was expecting.
You serious?
A 32.
And I sent out an email on Friday morning. I sent it to Tony and Brian St. Pierre at Cressy's because... like, I've been amping up this movie ever since I was there this past last semester or whatever. And they're like, oh, it's going to suck. How can you, like, Crank and not insert famously good movie there? And I'm like, come on. It's tons of great fun. You know, Transporter 1-3, tons of fun. And... I just don't see how people can actually say that this is a bad movie without being snobby bastards who, just are like, oh, I'm going to go watch Godfather 2 again today, and then I'm going to go watch Clockwork Orange, and then The Wizard of Oz for its thematic crap. I don't know. Like, really? Just watch
can we
a
just
fun
do
movie.
The whole show with you talking like that?
Yeah, that would be great.
With my fake British accent?
Yeah.
If that's what that was, then yes.
My British / upper class accent.
Oh, my name is Kevin Larrabee, and I hail from Boston, Mass.
Hell is that?
I actually was able to
Wizard of Oz and Godfather.
I don't know. I'm just thinking of like random movies or like the English
Patient. Why not
the
English Patient or something like that?
2001: A Space Odyssey. Like that's boring. Come on. No, I'm 22. What am I? 23 or 22?
You don't even know your age, dude. This is just going.
It's one of the. I don't care. What is it? 2008. So I am 23. And
is this a record for fail?
Yeah, I
fail
it's
enough,
not
yeah.
a record for fail, John. I just have other priorities than knowing my age.
And what would those be?
Anyways, the oh my god, I've been playing this Wicked Sweet Conan game on the Xbox.
Oh yeah,
it's super fucking violent. Like it is. If you played God of War, it makes God of War look like Sesame Street, the video game.
And what's the backstory? Give me the breakdown.
It's a big dude, and he just cuts things up. And you like, you can throw people up in the air, cut them in half in midair, or you can pile drive them. And as you pile drive them, when their head hits the ground, their head just snaps off their neck. It's awesome. It's
wow.
Did
you see the
$9.99 Walmart, man? $9.99.
Wow. On The Onion, they had like the new video game sensation of the year. Did you see that?
No, what's that?
I got to find it for you. It's hysterical. It's like I think it's called Headshot, and they're like,
oh no, I have seen that.
Yeah, it's the most amazing game in the world. I
played it, man. It was awesome.
All it is you have the gun, and it's like a first-person shooter, and they're just showing the screenshots. It's like a person will show up in front of you, and you just shoot them in the head, and then the next person comes, and you shoot them in the head. That's all it is over and over and over again. You're just shooting people in the head, and their head explodes.
And it's great, because they'll give you different guns. Like, they'll give you a pistol or a shotgun, and the shotgun just takes half their head away. Like, it's just like a vertical slice just gone of their face.
And then they're like, oh, and they're already working on part two, where they're going to include like chainsaws, and then you just slice their head in half. That's the whole game. It's just shooting heads. It was hysterical.
Day one, I'll be there.
Yeah,
picking it
that
up.
Is awesome. Wow.
What else? Oh, you know, you guys watch Lost?
Hell yeah.
That's been really good lately, huh?
Yeah. I wasn't. The last episode I thought was, even though the subject matter I was like really looking forward to and backstory and whatever, it didn't work out as well as I'd wanted it to, but in general, this season's been pretty fantastic.
But at the end of the episode, you're just like, hell yes.
Yeah, I was, even though I kind of saw it coming a second before he actually got out of the sub. But
well, he's been in the credits for the last 3 weeks. He knew he was coming back, so.
Well, of course, yeah. I saw a really, really, really interesting theory about Miles, though. It was on a forum, and someone wrote that.
Yeah, just watch out. If people don't want to know what's going on, you should probably stop listening.
Well, this isn't a spoiler because it's just someone's theory. So it doesn't mean that it's actually.
I got another one that I'll tell you, too.
All right. But the theory on Miles is that Miles is going to find out more about his dad, kind of have a breakdown, and tell his father about the impending doom and that he should get off the island. His father won't be able to do it, but he'll send his wife and Miles, the baby, away, and that's why Miles can talk to dead people, because he should be dead. But he intervened in his own existence and therefore got like out of phase.
That sounds doable.
Yeah, thought it was pretty cool. I was like, wow, that's fairly inventive. That's a good theory.
The other one that I've heard is that, and again, if you like, this is just a theory. This obviously isn't proven or anything like that, and it's a friggin' TV show. But in Lost, you know how you have Whitmore and you have what's the other bad guy's name?
Ben.
So you have these two guys and these seemingly two factions that were on the island in the 70s, and you know they keep they're playing around with the lead. Do you watch this show?
No.
Do you want me to?
No. Go ahead. I plan on watching it. I mean, like, it's over.
Then
people.
I don't want to. Well, okay. Well, anyways, there's time travel.
I'll pull my head. Before. You can just go, Lee. You can just yell at me, and I'll put my headphones back on.
Okay. Cool. Dude, let's not talk about Lost. Like, seriously, let's talk about Dirt on Lee.
Oh, sweet.
Have you been checking out the FLZine forums?
Yeah, no doubt.
I've been posting under a secret screen name.
Have you? Dude, you're not Lance Bass, are you?
Nah, dude. No, but seriously, the okay, so John.
Why do I feel like I'm in second grade and should have pigtails and a skirt on right now? From telling secrets.
Okay. But anyways, what the theory is that Ben and Whitmore, they're basically just screwing around with time. And before, I forget what the exact point was, but when Locke was going, or when Ben, remember Ben started playing with the time travel wheel?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's saying he was actually doing it again, so he was fooling around with the timeline again. And the theory is that basically, since Ben and Whitmore both are on the island in the past, they already know about all these people. So they're kind of screwing with their lives. And like they already knew ahead of time who the people that are going to be on the plane that's going to crash. So they knew about that. So in the real world, they could, you know, manipulate them and have all this detailed information on them. Such and so forth. So what they're doing is actually just, you know, they keep replaying this timeline over and over again, and they try to manipulate things to go their way. Like Ben will, you know, push the wheel and time will change, and then another time Whitmore pushes the wheel and time will change, and then they'll try again to, like, it's an ongoing battle within like a 30-year period. I didn't explain it that well.
No, but I think I know what you're saying. The way you explained it would fly in the face of physics, but I guess most of the show does.
Well, it's Special Island, made by Anubis and the Egyptians. Like, how did they make those pyramids? Aliens. People watch Stargate know what I'm talking about, and we do have Stargate fans on the show. So
sad. Get Lee back on.
Yay! Actually, I could probably just text her.
Yeah, that's true.
I heard something that sounded like Stallone calling for Adrian.
I thought it was more like Chewbacca.
Oh.
Like a Wookiee. Yeah.
Huh. Oh, I don't have my green tea today. Heads up.
Oh.
So if someone sounds like they're smoking pot, they really are. I think that's
my secrets.
Yeah, Lee, what have you been doing? Give us some off topic from your neck of the woods.
I haven't been doing anything. All I've been doing is working and getting emails from angry Jillian Michael fans. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
I saw that.
That was you know, I think you were pretty fair and balanced. I think you
I actually thought that I was nice.
And not even like the Fox News fair and balanced. I mean, I think you were the real fair and balanced. Oh God, Republicans hate me right now. Okay.
You just took it even deeper, didn't you?
Yeah, you know, I like to get in some digging on the weekends. Digging is fun.
It's good. Good. Good for your listeners.
Yeah. But seriously, whatever. I should stop talking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was it.
All right. Well, what we're going to do right now is we're going to record the FitCast. Hopefully, at this point, you don't see the timestamp as 2 hours and 30 minutes. Otherwise, I will.
Oh my God!
It'll happen.
I will have peed 14 times.
Yeah.
We'll keep track.